This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 12th of April, 2010, and today I'm joined for our monthly conversation with Greg Nicoletos, the Neo-Luddite original substrate human technological enslavement watchman and the man behind WakeUp.TV and WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com. Mr. Nicoletos, thank you as always for joining us.
Thank you, James. And just for the record for your listeners, I'm still a normal human. No upgrades.
No upgrades. Not yet. Not yet.
All right. Not for a while, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have many, many serious topics to talk about tonight. But before we delve right into it, I'm in the position once again of having to doff my cap to another great video from WakeUp.TV, and this time it's a parody on the viral ShamWow infomercial. Why don't you tell us, tell folks about that?
Yeah, what we basically did, we were actually doing an infomercial, you know, which actually came off the back of the infomercial that we actually did with VeriChip. So we took a continuation of the actual character of Scott Silverman, and I was actually watching a few videos of, you know, Vince from ShamWow, and I just thought, you know, the guy is just a classic, basically. So I thought, you know, can we actually take this guy and actually parody him? And actually do a naked scanner and then you know, infomercial, and we started working with it, and but before you knew it, it actually started taking shape, and the end result is quite hilarious. So I would definitely recommend people to actually view it. It's that funny. I still laugh at it after I've watched it 20 times. So, you know.
Absolutely. I can't recommend it enough. It's excellent. And I think I want to see more people out there doing things like this. I think it's just so great to see people taking and taking this ridiculous these ridiculous events that are happening and things that are being thrust before us and just laughing at them, because what else can you do with some of the ridiculous things we're being subjected to?
It is. And I mean, it takes it down the line of, it is where mankind is heading. It is just so ridiculous. We find ourselves at this point that quite often you have to infuse some sort of humor or parody or sarcasm just to keep the sanity as well, to keep coping with the information flows that are coming in. So for us, we not only make people actually laugh now with these sort of with these little ventures that we're doing, but at the same time, the actual view rates are quite high, and they are actually starting to go viral as well. So we won't obviously be stopping from the serious documentaries and the like, but it has also lightened up the mood as well, from not only from my perspective, but also from the movement, where we can actually go, you know what, we can actually tackle serious subjects with humor, but at the same time, we also do leave the actual videos on a, you know, on a note where, you know, come visit the website, wake up about this, and start taking some action.
You know, there's a phrase about catching more bears with honey. That can't be right. You don't catch bears. But there's a phrase that's not coming to mind right at the moment.
Is it the one with the fish and the net? Is that it? Or
That one would work too. There are many animal analogies that I'll allow the listener to insert right here. But
And look, for me, as mentioned, and I think I mentioned this on the last interview, I think there is definitely a direct result of why, you know, YouTube has actually moved their actual video segments down to 10-minute viewpoints, I guess, you know. So when we actually view a 50-minute video, as mentioned before, the drop-off rates between the first section of the video at the 10 minutes, and then you'll have a drop-off rate at the second part of the, you know, between 11 to 20 minutes and so forth. It's just a case of, you know, retaining the person's attention span. And what I have actually realized, regardless of how good the actual piece is, people just, you know, might get bored at one particular segment and just leave. And it's just a sad case of events. But that's the reason we're trying to just shorten the actual message and just hit home as fast as possible. And you know, strike the arrow through the apple, basically.
Well, that's right. And you brought this up during our last conversation, or maybe it was even two conversations ago, where we were talking about the way that YouTube limits to 10 minutes and how that is affecting people's attention spans and the reasons that that might be being done. And something else that has struck me recently is that with all the changes to the way the YouTube is actually laid out, it's getting harder and harder, even as a producer of videos, to actually link your videos together in a way that people will be able to find the entire series. There are ways to do it, but it's getting harder and harder to get.
Absolutely. I mean, even just putting a video response now, I actually spent a good, when I went to the new platform, I spent a good 4 minutes just looking around saying, how do I actually video respond to my video? And I look at it like this. Everything that YouTube, who is Google, everything that they basically undertake is not really for the benefit of free speech, free will, and, the progression of mankind. It is really about, control, and obviously controlling the message of the masses, and ensuring that their keywords generate revenue. So,
absolutely right. That's so spot on, and that's why we have to use it as a tool, because it obviously has the eyes watching. YouTube is one of the biggest sites on the internet, period. So we need to be using it as a tool to reach more people, but we also have to be supporting and thinking about alternative ways of getting the information out, and supporting alternative sites as well.
Absolutely. And you actually, I've seen some of your work on Sovereign Independent. Is that the Island guys?
Yes, that's an Irish newspaper, and, but they'd also have
absolutely
a website.
And yeah. I'm tinkering with the idea that we actually go to print as well. When you actually spoke to the editor, I actually met the guy when I was in the UK, and it is a case of now as we're moving into an environment which will obviously they'll start bantering around with driver's licenses for internet and ensuring that your IPs, you are who you are, and different levels of security depending on what you want to actually undertake on the internet, whether it's a financial transaction, a banking transactions and the like. So I can see, we need to look at old school media again in the same light as what we're actually looking at new media as well. So I don't think old media is dead at all. It's just a case of we need to just basically adapt and move with the times.
I couldn't agree more. Just diversify and try to get it out in every possible way that we can, just to make sure that something survives the info Armageddon that they seem to be setting up, the virtual false flag that they want to use to bring in the new internet. And actually, we've just seen the UK pass the Digital Economy Bill, which will give the government sweeping powers to shut down parts of the internet or take people off the internet if they're doing things that the government doesn't like. So it's getting serious, and we all have to be really ramping up our efforts in every way we can.
And in Australia, we've actually got Conroy, who is actually the Minister for Communications on our side. And look, Australia's raised in excess of, I think it's 150,000 signed petitions, and it's all fallen on deaf ears. And those are the sort of instances, or those are the sort of things that really cripple the mindset and the psyche of a populace, especially when, you generate that amount of signatures, and then the government just basically pushes through railroads with their own agenda. And, is there a more classic example of we're not living in a democracy, we're living in a veneer of a democracy, and once you actually scratch through, you'll just realize that the government officials are basically just rubber stamping the goals of the elite, or the the commands that have been barked down the line.
That's right. It's a plutocracy or an oligarchy, as it has always been, but it's more and more sophisticated, to the point where we don't necessarily even see it as such anymore, which is obviously the most dangerous system to be living in. But that's not an excuse to disengage from the system, but to engage it even more and to expose just how thoroughly controlled it is. And that's the only way I think we'll win the ideological battle, which is the real battle that we're facing. But okay. All right. Well, today I wanted to touch on one of the many topics that you're tracking on wakeup.tv, aka We the People Will Not Be Chipped.com. and that's predictive programming. And this is something that I have broached on this program many times before, but since it's our first time talking about it, why don't I get your take on what predictive programming is and how it functions?
Predictive programming is basically, it is a technique of actually taking future scenarios or events that are in the interests of the elite and basically preparing the people's minds, fertilizing the soil, if you like, to ensure that when the event actually does take place in the future, that the person who is then coming to those crossroads actually has a reference point to state, you know, in his mind, he's actually will then go, okay, well, look, I have basically been anchored in this particular experience. And even though that experience might have actually only occurred in fiction, the fact is this seed had actually been sown, you know, whether it's through fiction, through a science fiction movie, through the media, through, you know, propaganda that's coming down the line, whether it's a movie on the History Channel predicting, you know, the end of humanity. Obviously, we're seeing a lot of, you know, documentaries coming down on, you know, Armageddon and the apocalypse and, you know, a lot of doomsday sort of material that's coming down. But what actually happens is when those actual events occur in reality and start actually panning out, the people have actually been on a level programmed. So when you actually look at computer programming on how it works, it is a case of, you know, you have your coding experts, your engineers basically sit down, they work with specific code, and they iron through the bugs, they debug, they verify, they validate, and the end result is that the program, for example, especially from the IT world, the end result is that you want the program to come out with a specific outcome. And quite often the specific outcome is for the people to embrace the future event that has come down the line. So utilizing, you know, science fiction and really, you know, virtual scenarios, the end user, when he actually comes to that point, the brain, for example, says, you know, I have been here before. And even though he might have been there before from a science fiction perspective or from a virtual perspective, but has not actually experienced it in real life, the fact is that the end user then goes, oh, well, look, this was inevitable. This, you know, I was told that this was going to happen 10 years ago. So therefore, there is more of the end user actually embracing something that, you know, 20, 30 years ago that would have been actually considered totally preposterous. But it's very much a case of, you know, cultivating the ground, sowing the seed, and then obviously wrapping it around, you know, whether it's technology or whether wrapping it around through entertainment, wrapping it around through sport, media, you name it. It's a case of, you know, these guys are actually masterminds of psychology and basically understand, you know, human behavior and know how the human psyche actually operates. So it's more of a case of just looking at the human race, you know, and utilizing techniques that go back hundreds of years, even thousands of years, to get to a point where we go, okay, well, look, we will put in code A, and generally we've seen that the person will basically accept it at the end result. So it's a case of programming the end user, and then the end result is the end user is basically accepting of it because the program has been proposed to him in a certain manner. So it is really manipulation on the highest level. It is basically taking the mind, harnessing it, coordinating it, and then obviously, you know, building a new reality. And I guess the reality or the map of reality that the person has, it's just really a unique representation of the world that that person has been conditioned into. So just because you have inputs going into the person that the person is actually uptaking, embracing and considering true, that doesn't necessarily mean that that actual linguistic map that he has undertaken or embraced is true. It could be a total fabrication and just a very well orchestrated program that has been put there for a specific reason, for a specific outcome, for a desired result.
Right. Well, that's a lot to take in. So what's a simple example that most people would be familiar with?
I guess the classic example would be, I'll give you a good example on the, there was a Tom Cruise movie. Which one was that? The one with, it's escaped my mind.
Minority Report?
Yeah, the Minority Report. I mean, when you actually look at the Minority Report, where it actually had, you know, end users that had pre-crime, for example, there was thought crime in it, various topics of, you know, biometric scanning, actually, you know, falsifying biometric readers and the like, radio frequency ID or your environment actually communicating to you, pitching services to you, knowing who you are, knowing what your next predictive movement is, knowing your purchasing cycles, knowing what you have purchased before so they can actually pitch different services to you. When you actually now look at, you know, the majority of radio frequency ID products that are coming down the line, and you start looking at augmented reality, contactless pay, biometrics basically that are tied into radio frequency ID solutions in regards to pitching products depending on your actual purchasing trends, you will notice most bloggers out there will always reference Minority Report. So what Minority Report really did, it took something that never existed in the mindset or the psyche of people and basically said, look, this is what's coming down the line. These are the possibilities, that will be coming down the line 5 to 10 years. And here we are at this point, and it just showcases to you how powerful predictive programming is and what a skill technique it is, because the familiarization that the public now has is, you know, technology that is now totally infringing on civil liberties, your privacy, with Google obviously, promoting now different applications in regards to once you give up your actual location, they will then pitch services to you, et cetera. You know, 20 years ago, that would have just been considered lunacy, James. It would have said, you know, there is no way we will get to this point. But movies like Minority Report, what that basically does, it lessens the blow, it softens the future, and people then start seeing it, look, this is just progress. This is something that is inevitable, and, you know, mankind will always continue to evolve. So, you know, this is just par for the course. Where what humanity should really be saying is, why is it that these movies are basically coming out, or, you know, regardless of whether it's movies, media, the gaming sector, obviously, why is it that these movies seem to be 5, 10, 15, 20 years before the actual event? And why don't we start actually querying of why is it that there are certain sectors within, you know, this world, whether it's, you know, you're looking at Hollywood or you're looking at the entertainment industry or you're looking at media, why is it that they seem to be 10 to 20 years ahead of the actual average person out there? It's simply because they know what the agendas are, and they know, and they're moving and pacing and leading the populace down a specific path for a specific agenda to basically be fulfilled.
Right, and I think Minority Report really is one of those movies that seems to, if there's any argument to be made for the fact that movies do this, I think Minority Report is one of the prime examples, and I'm glad you pointed to that, because it's one of those movies that came out, and literally just a year, 2 years, 3 years after it came out, all of these various technologies started to be, if not rolled out on a big scale, at least introduced to the public suddenly. We had things like billboards that would talk to people, whisper in their ear electronically, then and immediately all the articles were talking about Minority Report. And you're right, it puts it into that frame that we, oh, you already know this, you've already seen this, this is just something that's now that we've imagined it, and now it's possible. Whereas it seems that in cases like this, it may have been the case where this technology was already ready to roll out, and they just needed a way to introduce it to the public that was not so frightening.
And exactly, and introducing it through the entertainment culture, if you like, and through with a family going out together, if you can obviously tie in entertainment with the actual propaganda, well, you've actually brought you've anchored within that event fun, popcorn, drinks, a night out, the guy's basically gone out with his family to relax. So not only have you introduced new concepts, new propaganda, and shape-shifted the mindset of these people of what is actually or molded the minds of what is coming down the line to be more accepting and fertilizing the ground to accept concepts that they normally would not accept, you've actually introduced that with entertainment and with joy and with fun and the like. So, you're talking about mastermind manipulators, basically, who are just really programming, an audience, for the total control and manipulation of the mind. But if you said that to the average guy out there, who did go see Minority Report, he would just say, that was just a movie. It was just a movie. And, And that's the point. The programming is so slick and so well orchestrated and so well coordinated that the audience that basically participates in these movies, unless you actually understand the big global agenda and the push behind it and what is at play, that is why, unless you have all your ducks lined up in a row, it is quite easily to be dismissed as a lunatic conspiracy theorist.
That's right. Well, you slip one past the goalie when you get a message embedded in entertainment, because people's defenses are down. And in another sense, seeing is believing. Therefore, if we see something on the screen, we will believe it into existence, or if when it appears, it will seem like it's always been there. So I do understand how it works in that way, but it raises the question, is there any way of creating a movie or a book or some sort of story that transcends that or breaks through that? Is there any way to present a hopeful story about a totalitarian future, for example, that does not in a way play into the totalitarian future predictive program?
That is an excellent question, James, because even with our side, with the We the People movement, and I've brought this up with yourself offline, I realize as well, like, for example, we go out and we obviously campaign heavily against very cheap positive ID. We tell people about the human inventory issue. We talk about contactless pay. We explain to them how it'll move from contactless pay then to, pay by your mobile, et cetera, then it'll actually move to the elimination of checks and then the elimination of cash, et cetera. So even though we are educating the masses, at the same time, we are actually in a case, unless we're doing it in a hopeful manner, a lot of people can actually say, look, this organization is basically pushing fear down our throats. They're telling us this is inevitable. So we have to play a very careful game of how we actually go into market and at the same time also offer hope, because if you don't offer hope and you're basically always utilizing fear as the driver or as the vehicle, you will end up with a paralyzed audience. And if an audience is paralyzed, there is no difference between a paralyzed, fearful audience that is just stuck in a rut and really doesn't know what to do, than someone who's basically half asleep anyway and is not open to any of the information that's out there. So For me, I think it has to be presented in a specific way, and you also have to give specific not guidelines, but, you know, take action points. Like for me, when they say, you know, how do you stop the encroachment of, you know, the cashless system? The point is, you do not undertake contactless pay. You do not go to 4G mobile phones. You do not utilize your iPhone that's coming up with iPhone with iWallet and iKey. Once ATMs start utilizing biometric ATMs, you storm into your bank account manager with your passport. And you say, I'm going to be doing all transactions like this. If you start moving to biometric ATMs, I will move my money to a different bank. And this is the sad thing. For this plan to all basically come to fruition, it really does need the masses to adopt it. And for me, the adoption is just so pathetic. I mean, you have people that are willing to have people lose their actual jobs when you're looking at, you know, the people that are working, whether at Walmart and they're the cash register, you know, person behind the register. And quite often people will go down and, you know, utilize contactless pay, knowing full well that they are limiting the role of the cashier at Walmart. So they are instrumental in basically lessening the capacity or the role of that actual person, putting that person out of a job, but at the same time bringing in this slave grid, which eventually will move from contactless pay to the elimination of cash. And then from there on, where do you go from there? You basically have any human implantable microchip.
Right. Well, you make a lot of important points there. And one of them is just the analogy of when you're driving along the road and you see a pothole, if you keep looking at the pothole, you're going to drive into the pothole. You have to look away in order to drive somewhere else. So
yeah,
so if
that
we
that is so true.
Right. So if we just focus on the fear and the negativity, then it will make that stronger. So there, you're absolutely right. We have to concentrate on the hope and the ways that we can affect change. And that when change happens, we have to celebrate it as a victory. So that's all very important, I think, and something to be to really think about. But it makes me wonder about works like Orwell's 1984 or Huxley's Brave New World that in a lot of respects seem to conform to this idea of the predictive program future reality. But these seem to be models that people have used in order to identify totalitarianism in our current time rather than to accept it. And I'm wondering what the difference between something like that and something like Minority Report is.
I'll look at George Orwell, not so much Huxley, I guess, but I'll look at George Orwell's 1984 as being one of the key books that I actually read when I was at school. I don't think they actually offer it in the curriculum anymore. And it struck home to the point where, you know, if you couldn't actually identify with what is actually happening now and say, you know, to yourself, you know, was George Orwell a mini prophet in a sense, you know, of what is actually coming down the line, because the alignment and the congruence of what is actually happening in world events to what was in 1984, I mean, even with the thought screens, the double think, the thought, you know, it's just an amazing book. What I do see, though, with the Minority Report, there isn't a sort of an alarm bell sounding. I mean, you have it wrapped up in a Hollywood marketing scheme. The movie itself is obviously there to generate specific, you know, income and revenue. And I, even though you have the warnings in a sense within that, I think once you've actually wrapped it up into entertainment, even though somebody can go see, let's say, for example, one of the most important pieces of, whether it's a, I wouldn't say documentary so much, but once you actually go view a fiction movie, I do think that there is a detachment in regards to, you know, the conscious and the subconscious mind in a sense. So, you know, a lot of people will watch, you know, key movies that have a lot of a lot of, you know, solid evidence to showcase where humanity's going, littered amongst the propaganda and the like. But the end result is what are we actually doing with that particular information? I mean, you know, Minority Report, going back to that, is an excellent example of where radio frequency idea was going. you know, obviously tracking and the like. But, you know, what has come from that? It's a good question, James, that I don't really have an answer to. I mean, when does, you know, sounding the alarm bell go from sounding the alarm bell to actually being a predictive program?
It does seem to be a very fine line, but you are right to point out that there is the difference there, and that there is the alarm bell going off in 1984 that people can't fail to see or to hear when they read that book, and to realize that this is a nightmare that we have to avoid. And you're right, for some reason it is not there in Minority Report, even though it is presented in a way that I guess we could take away the message. Of course, pre-crime is a terrible idea, and the idea of it is terrible, but we don't come away with the same sense from that work that we do from 1984. Perhaps it's the medium itself. Perhaps books lend themselves more to the alarm bell than movies.
Oh, I think that is true. And I mean, when you actually look at the field of neurolinguistic programming, which really is, it's a study of basically transferable skills, which, you know, can actually manipulate the unconscious mind. So one of the major forerunners, or the guy that actually brought it to market, I guess, in the best possible way, you had Richard Bandler, who actually brought out NLP, and then you had Anthony Robbins, who really took the model of neurolinguistic programming and he basically made it accessible to the masses. So all neurolinguistic programming is basically taking the relationships of how we think, which is the neuro component, how we communicate, which is the linguistics component, and then the patterns of behavior and emotions, which are the actual programs. So, for example, you have different modalities of how actually people will interpret information. So if, for example, you know, you like actually watching movies the most, you will actually have the visual component, or the visual modality will basically appeal to you the most. Then you have the auditory modality, for example, which is where people actually like hearing the spoken word and the like. So everyone will choose a different modality to actually accept information. So, for example, a musician will prefer the auditory modality, and the artist, for example, that, you know, is keen with drawings and the like, will obviously go down the visual modality. Now, I also think the predictive programming, you know, propaganda machine does obviously cater to how different individuals process information. So for the guy that basically is totally visually orientated, he will be the guy that they pitch the movies to, Friday Night Football, and the like. And then you have obviously the music industry. So that will basically cover the auditory modality, and so it goes down the line. So I guess what neurolinguistic programming, and it also covers into neurosemantics, it is a case of how the information is presented can actually affect the map of reality. So if you're receiving information in a specific manner that is congruent to how you are happy to accept the information, there is a much greater chance that you will actually accept that information without actually dissecting it, because it just fits your DNA, if that makes sense. So it's just a science, James, and it's a science that Obama has. I mean, when you look at his speeches, the guy is an absolute master neurolinguistic practitioner. There is no doubt about it. How he actually paces and he leads his audience, he knows exactly when to stop, he knows exact. He has congruence with his audience, he basically knows how to, you know, establish rapport, he models, the success that he has had is not a case of he's a brilliant man. He has actually basically mastered certain skills of how to transfer the message to the masses who do not understand how actual communication breaks down. So it is a science, and that's the reason they call him the teleprompter guy.
Well, whatever ability he has to lie, it's really uncanny when you look at it. I for people who are following my Sunday Update series on YouTube, in my latest episode, I had a a clip from Obama talking about how he wanted to end Bush's illegal NSA wiretap program, which, of course, he only expanded and made even worse when he came into power. So to watch him in 2007 saying with such conviction and such force that he detested this program, we don't need it, we're going to end it, and every single word of that, a complete 100%, 180-degree lie, and to watch him doing it, it's really uncanny to just sit there and know he is lying through his teeth, and it's such a convincing way.
But what he does, and this is the point, within neurolinguistic programming, you have something that is actually called modeling. So what they do is they look at key, let's say, speakers in the past. So they would look at Martin Luther King. You would look at Adolf Hitler, for example. And you will notice with all the great speakers, they basically have a unique representation, basically, of how to present a speech. So what it comes down to is what they do is they model the actual successful actions and behaviors of these people, tie it in a bit, obviously, to, you know, how Obama is obviously a slightly different individual as well, but utilizing, you know, specific sequences, it enables the person to basically establish rapport with his audience. So you could actually call these guys hypnotists, I mean, on a lower level, you know. To people that can critically think, I mean, I can tell when I'm being manipulated. So as soon as I go in with the frame of reality that this guy's an absolute liar. So I just sit down and try to dissect how many times he's trying to manipulate me. So if you went in with the belief system that this guy is all about hope, change, and, you know, bringing in a new world where everyone's, you know, has a house and, you know, a beach house and two cars.
And he'll pay your gas bill and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you want to go in with that mindset, well, you will be manipulated to the nth degree, because there is no denying that Obama is a masterful liar. There is just no two ways about it. I mean, what he says and his actions are totally incongruent. I mean, he's 100 times worse than Bush. At least Bush couldn't even string two words or two sentences together, you know?
That's exactly right. In fact, in that same Sunday Update episode, I have a clip right before that of Bush lying about the NSA wiretapping program, and you don't really get the same sense from him, because you tend to not believe anything he's saying on any subject, or not believe that he's even...
He was lying.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. You don't even believe that he understands what he's saying, let alone... exactly. So it is much more dangerous with Obama.
I think George Bush was an excellent example to showcase to the world that, you know, these people are not running the world. You know, they're not running the world, and
right, exactly. The idea that Bush was really the man behind 9/11 or something like that, I mean, that is a ridiculous concept.
It is, and I could, you know, I had a friend of mine who said my 10-year-old son could have delivered a better speech than that and been more believable, and I didn't debate that, because he didn't even believe. He was totally incongruent with what the speech was. And his mannerisms didn't actually match up. And then some people can see it, and some people can't. So what we need to look at is, obviously, you know, how much of communication is nonverbal. But at the same time, you do have master communicators, and Obama is one of them.
Well, the whole concept and the practice of neurolinguistic programming, I think, is so fascinating and so important for people to be becoming more aware of, including myself. It's not something that I've spent a great deal of time researching, but I would like to, as I'm sure many people out there would. So do you have any sources or suggestions for people to look into on that subject?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, neurolinguistic programming occurs on every level. So you will have certain communicators. You'll have great sales reps, for example, that have never actually undertaken neurolinguistic programming or neurosemantics, but they can actually establish rapport. So just on a brief level, I mean, somebody who basically, you know, accepts information with a visual modality, he will say, oh, I can see what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. I can see it. It's crystal clear. So he will speak in actual visual terms. And then when you hear those visual terms, you will then obviously match the visual terms in response so you can actually establish rapport. And then once you've actually gained rapport with the person by matching their language, the beliefs, the values, and the experience, you basically can then take the relationship to another level. Now, the thing with neurolinguistic programming, it can obviously be utilized very much so for manipulation. That is just, there's no two ways about it. I mean, it's been utilized by psychologists, psychotherapists, in the like. But if the person is actually utilizing neurolinguistic programming as the foundation by which to actually assess what is happening out in the world stage, you will actually then start going, okay, well, what they have now done is they have basically taken this map of reality. They're now pacing and leading me down a specific point. You will then see certain pause events that occur. They will then might anchor you, for example, you know, which is basically taking a stimulus, you know, similar to Pavlov's dog, basically, to elicit a certain response. So neurolinguistic programming, even though it might sound very broad and very, very deep, it isn't really. It is just really taking normal communications that people have on a daily basis and identifying the modalities in a sense. And by doing that, it just makes communication, when you actually communicate with someone, just a lot easier to understand. It actually gives you a structure to language. And then once you have a structure to language of how actually people communicate or can communicate, well, you know, you can actually build better rapport with people. And that's not to say that you're manipulating them by matching how they want to actually hear the conversation or the information. What you're really doing is you're presenting the information in how they represent their reality or their map of the reality, their model of the world within their mind. So the quickest 101, I'll just recommend, Anthony Robbins did an excellent job with his I don't know what book it was. There was one book though that went pretty mainstream, and even though he doesn't utilize the actual, you know, the terminology itself, you know, and says it's neurolinguistic programming, the fact is it is rife on all levels, from government, when you actually hear the advisor from, you know, the White House speaker, to Obama, to any world leader. You will actually start seeing specific structure that has been laid out by their, the guy that actually writes the speeches, or their, their marketing team, if you like, to how to actually take this message into market. So there is a specific science to it, James.
There absolutely is, and certainly it's a topic that I'm going to be looking more and more into, and I think a lot of people will after hearing this conversation, because it is just so fascinating on so many levels. But switching gears slightly, if the medium can convey, if each medium can convey a different message, then how about the medium of video games?
I used to be a gamer when I was, you know, in my younger days and the like. So I came from the IT field, and generally when you're in the IT field, gaming is just part and parcel of that particular culture. So what I have noticed though, like the gaming sector, it has now actually surpassed, you know, actual movies and releases that are now coming out from Hollywood, and you are starting to actually see a lot of games that are actually now starting to promote, you know, transhumanism. I mean, one good example is Deus Ex 3, which is just coming out. And I just recommend people to just Google it. It's on YouTube. You actually spell it D-E-U-S-E-X and then 3. And how the actual video basically leads off, it states that we are but just a stepping stone to what we can become. And when you actually see different sections of the video clip, you know, certain things come up on the screen, which is, you know, augmented people, are not welcome here. It showcases the H+ logo, which is obviously promotes transhumanism. There's, you know, boxes of prosthetic arms, et cetera, et cetera. So between that, and then you have other, you know, video games like Bioshock 2, I think it is, which, you know, paints a grim picture of, you know, genetic experimentation, basically, you know, just GE just gone totally out of control. It is really seeding the minds of the youth that might not want to actually watch documentaries or films and the like. So going back to the whole predictive programming, you know, on fertilizing people's minds, it amazes me that almost every sector is dominated, whether it is gaming, whether it is movies, whether it is music, every area seems to be covered. And each particular area has a specific driving agenda. And also, let's not forget, you know, the first-person shooters like, you know, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, which I stand guilty of charged, having actually owned it. I do own it, James, so you can terminate me right now. you know, that is one of those, you know, first-person shooter games, and, you know, it's basically... You've actually got one part in it as well, which has got the kill cam, so you can actually see the play go down, and you can watch the last, you know, 5 seconds of you know, from the viewpoint of the killer. So, fantastic, you know.
So, what about the connection between video games and the military?
There's a major component to that, and I'm actually seeing that as well with the, you know, UFC, which is, you know, Ultimate Fighting Championship. I think that's quite big now in is it big in Japan now, or it's the
yes,
fastest
it is.
Growing
yeah.
sport? Yeah. And what I have noticed all of a sudden with the UFC is you're now starting to have an alliance with the army. So now the army and the navy are actually starting to advertise because they know, look, the UFC is one of the fastest growing sports. Or it is. It's the fastest growing sport in the world. Let's, you know, grasp onto the emotions of cool. Warriors, you know, the whole Caesar complex, I guess, of gladiators fighting for their lives, and at the same time they're preying on the youth. They're preying on people that, you know, think they are invincible. They are going to be the hero of their country. They can't possibly die, and they are going to go fight terror and basically save the world. So I see there is a major push from the military-industrial complex simply by the time, not by the time, but when you actually look at how many games are actually released that are first-person shooters, but at the same time have massive propaganda just running through them, basically. And there was another video game, I think, called Crysis as well, which, you know, not only showcased, you know, a war between, you know, the U.S. Special Forces and the like, but the soldiers themselves were decked out in nano suits and embraced human plus transhumanism technology as well.
Absolutely. Well, so I must admit that personally, I'm not much of a gamer. I haven't played video games a lot since I was 13 or 14, but I certainly have seen enough looking, you know, at things on the web and videos and things to know that things are quite different than when I was playing games, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. So really, I mean, it just seems that there's a new influence or new level that's being taken at this point. I don't know about the corporate structures of these companies or the way that the gaming industry has really changed in the last years, though. But is there anything on that side that you can tell us about?
Look, I'm starting just to research a bit on seeing whether there's an actual think tank in regards to, and I'm sure there would be. I can guarantee the as you mentioned, how games have really changed from, you know, Pac-Man to Space Invaders to basically, you know, Call of Duty, modern warfare, and obviously with a major push as well to the occult side with World of Warcraft, you know, where everyone can be a 90 level arcane mage and cast, you know, arcane barrage and firestorm and anyway pentagrams everywhere in the room and demonic portals and you know, and a lot of parents, you know, just go, that's just part of the game. But I can tell you that these people that are obviously coding the game, there is nothing by accident. I mean, myself coming from the IT background, when you're coding, there is nothing by accident. Nothing actually ends up in a program unless it has been designed to be put there. It is a case of it is engineered. Any object that occurs in the game or any storyline that occurs in the game, it is serving a purpose. It is designed to actually lead you down a specific path. And, you know, going back to what a program is, a program is basically there to elicit a good end response. And that's what we're seeing currently in the world. I mean, there's certain programs that are being run, whether you look at it from a military perspective or you look at it from a propaganda perspective. And then what happens then is these elite actually do gauge of, you know, how is humanity responding to this? Do we go to plan B? Do we go to plan C? Or do we just, you know, continue to lead them down this path because there doesn't seem to be much resistance? But I can say the average games that are now coming out, you know, from PlayStation 3, Xbox, and let's not forget Xbox Natal, which is just coming out soon, which will bring sensed environments basically to the home. So you'll have, you know, facial recognition, biometric markers. You will have finger geometry. You will have voice recognition. And then once you actually bundle that into human entertainment, what's the difference between having an Xbox with those sort of capacities and that sort of sensed environment and going into an airport, which is basically scanning you to protect you from terrorists? So, you know, this is a very slick operation. I mean, even the latest PlayStation 3 hand controllers, James, are coming out with biometric readers. I mean, it's my PlayStation 3. What do I need a biometric reader for? It's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and perhaps worthy of someone out there to parody in the way that you parodied the scanners. But yeah, absolutely. Well, so I guess we've skirted around this issue a little, but let's address it directly. Is there a way in which, if we're aware of this predictive programming, we can go into these entertainment experiences knowing what to expect and looking for it and thereby being, if not immune, at least better on guard against this type of programming?
Oh, look, I'm totally immune to it. I mean, even when I go out with my wife and we watch a movie, I just totally wreck it for her because I say, do you see what they're doing here? This is what's happening here. They're pacing us here. They're leading us here. They're basically trying to change the, you know, the frame of reality here. So it's a case of what we need to look at as well. There are some people that just want to go see a movie and do not want to think. They just want to go out and just switch off. So, and look, that's not saying anything bad about my wife. I mean, she is awake, but sometimes she does want to switch off from me as well.
I won't go there, but that's right. I mean, but there are a lot of people out there that are looking to escape in some way, and it does come to the point where eventually you start to wonder if there is any way to escape.
And look, that is the million-dollar question. I think for me personally, as long as I, you know, even though a lot of the work that's coming down the line and the news is depressing and the like and so forth, I revel in the fact that I can actually see the game. I know what it's about. I'm above the game in a sense because the game itself hasn't manipulated me. And within that, I'm ecstatic. It's a case of, you know, I don't know what the end game will finally be of, you know, if they do push for the finishing line. But regardless, I will not be submitting to their system. So that's one less person that loses at the end of the day.
And on that note, why don't you tell folks about the website?
We have a easy way to get to the website now. We used to have wethepeoplenotbechip.com, but people complained. So we have wakeup.tv. So, yeah, that's a lot easier.
It certainly is, and I certainly hope people will flood and continue to flood that website with traffic because it is such a valuable resource. And I'd like to thank you for adding the RSS feed because it's
handy for me. Yeah, we did. We listened. We did it the next day, yeah, actually.
I noticed, and it's helpful, and now I have a way of tracking this easily, so thank you. And
That's excellent,
and
James.
It's an excellent website, so I hope everyone will go there, wakeup.tv. Greg Nicoletos, thank you once again for joining us.
Thanks, James. It was excellent. All the best, mates. Speak to you next month.